Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Moskowain. Over the holiday break, 150 Temple University student athletes will likely be mulling their futures now that the university has announced plans to cut 7 intercollegiate sports. The university says the cuts are necessary because it doesn't have the resources to support all its teams. The elimination of Temple's baseball, softball, men's crew, and women's rowing teams, as well as men's gymnastics and men's indoor and outdoor track and field, will be effective in June. Athletes will be able to keep their scholarships as long as they keep their grades up, but 9 full-time coaches will be out of a job. We'll hear from one of those coaches, Hall of Fame men's gymnastics coach Fred Turoff, a little later. But joining us in the studio with some insight into Temple's decision are a pair of journalists who have been following this story closely. Bob Ford is a sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Welcome, Bob, to Radio Times.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Joey Craney is editor-in-chief of the Temple News, the university's student-run newspaper. Prior to becoming editor, he was a sports writer for the paper. Joey, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks very much.
Two other quick notes before we begin. In the interest of full disclosure, I myself am a Temple University alum. And secondly, we want you to know that we invited representatives of Temple University's Office of the President, as well as its athletics department, to join our conversation, but our invitation was declined. That said, let's get started, gentlemen. Certainly what I am seeing and hearing in many of the articles that I've been following is that whatever cost savings may come from this decision to cut the 7 teams, that in the end, it boils down to football. Is that the case, Bob Ford?
Well, a lot of the what's happened across the landscape of the country in collegiate sports over the last 20, 30 years has been about football because of Title IX compliance. You have to offset the number of scholarships you give. That is not really what Temple has said that is at the base of this. They're simply saying this is an economic decision. We want to get more in line with the other schools that are in their athletic conference, the American Athletic Conference, in terms of how many varsity sports they support. And they believe that they weren't able to continue, particularly because they were going to have some capital investments. They were going to have to make a new boathouse for the rowing team, for instance, that kind of stuff, that they didn't feel they were going to be able to make and still properly support the other sports. So from Temple's standpoint, they're saying this is not about football at all. This is about an economic decision.
As you look at all of that and you connect the dots, and no doubt there are financial issues, as you pointed out, it sounds as if there is a change just in college sports in general, as many schools are finding themselves struggling to finance so many teams. But at the same time, Temple's talking about potentially a new football stadium, so that program is safe. Do you think that football is at least one of the reasons that Temple has made this decision?
Temple has been allowing football to drive the train there for a long time now, and with not what you would look at as being great success. Now, their contention is that football is such a something that alumni can grab onto, that brings in donations, it helps the endowment and so forth, in a way that, you know, a softball team or a baseball team or, you know, a rowing team never could. And I think there's probably some truth to that. I think there's probably some numbers that back that up. But no, I think that Temple is not going to scale back on its commitment to football. And it's, you know, it's kind of odd. They're saving $3 million out of a $44 million budget with these recent cuts. In May, they approved a $3 million improvement to the practice field at the football facility. So it's, you know, one hand is saying one thing, the other hand is saying the other in this case.
Yeah. Joey Craney, you've been following this closely as editor-in-chief of the Temple News. What's the mood been like on campus? I know everybody's winding down now for finals, but since this news came out, what's it been like?
I would say it's been pretty universally panned, this decision. I think students are disappointed in the athletic department that would, I guess, turn us back on. It's 200 student athletes that are affected total. 150 are underclassmen who we're going to have to actually deal with this next in the next couple of years. But about 200 student athletes who are on these teams who are seniors but still have to compete in the spring and deal with this. There was a demonstration at a Board of Trustees meeting last weekend. It was a public session held at the new Morgan Hall, where about 100 student athletes came in and just kind of sat and listened to the board. The president addressed the cuts for about 2 minutes in his president's report, but there was no actual physical demonstration or anything like that. There wasn't any opportunity for student athletes to get public comment, which a lot of people have criticized, including the great Bob Ford here. And since then, I mean, there's been there was a rally for the crew and rowing team. I know all of the sports that were cut are trying to protest this. There have been petitions online, plans to try to fundraise their way back into the athletic department. But as far as the mood on campus, I mean, this is the biggest news story that I've seen in my 4 years working at the Temple News, and I would say it's a pretty sad one for a lot of people.
Well, and the Temple News did an editorial talking about just how difficult it has been to even cover this story. It hasn't been difficult just for the athletes who were in that meeting and unable to speak, but for journalists like yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the editorial was criticizing the Board of Trustees in general. This is a board of 36 people, a lot of whom are not affiliated with Temple in any way other than the connection to the board. Some of them are car salesmen. Bill Cosby's a voting member of the Board of Trustees. He could have voted on these cuts if he had wanted to. He doesn't attend any of the meetings. They're the most powerful board of the entire university. They're in charge of raising tuition, approving facilities. I mean, these are the people who make the decisions at the university. And for the large majority, they're all just almost impossible to contact. They don't have publicly listed email addresses at Temple, which is a glaring lack of transparency at a university of this size. And I guess that related back to the cuts at the public meeting on Saturday, where this is, again, an untransparent board that just wouldn't give these student-athletes a chance to comment.
Yeah, you wrote about that as well, Bob.
I did, and let me take a moment to point out the great work that the Temple News and Joey Cranny have done on this story. And it's not been an easy story to pursue, and the Board of Trustees has not been transparent, has not been terribly forthcoming. I mean, when he points out that there's not even publicly listed emails, the president of the school has a publicly listed email, and the Board of Trustees don't. So we're talking about a public institution, taxpayer money. And the fact that a lot of what happened here was a process that happened sort of by fiat behind closed doors, and then they come out one day at the close of business on a Friday and hand down this decision, which is kind of a cowardly way to do things anyway. And then they have a public meeting where these athletes show up, these affected athletes, their students, and they say, we'd like to, you know, express our opinion. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this. And they don't give them any kind of a forum. And that's the kind of thing that really kind of ticked me off. I just think that they treated the students so badly. They threw this down at them at the beginning of finals week. Here's kids going into finals, yeah. And now they're wondering, you know, if their sport is even going to exist. And I just think that it's sort of a high-handed way to handle it and not becoming a public institution.
Yeah. And, Bob, you mentioned earlier that Temple, it sounds like, is not alone in being in this situation. Is this reflective of a change nationally in college sports?
Well, not just college sports, but the way colleges and universities are operated overall. I mean, these are sort of tough times, even despite raising tuitions and everything else. You know, colleges and universities make choices on cutting band and orchestra programs, on all sorts of extracurricular things, not just sports programs. But yes, looking specifically at sports, over the last 20, 30 years, the smaller sports, the non-revenue sports, the wrestling programs, the gymnastics programs, the rowing programs, the swimming and diving programs have taken enormous hits. And by no means is Temple out of line with what's going on across the country. As I said, you know, my real problem was the way this was handled and the way it came down.
What about conference realignment, Bob? There's been a lot of that going on, and Temple has been caught up in that for better or for worse. To what extent does that impact what's happening at Temple right now, the whole decision to change conferences?
Well, I think Joey can probably better answer that because he knows a little bit more about the actual finances of those individual teams. But I would say that, and this is really the case where football drives the train, because football is such a moneymaker and everyone wants to try to land into one of these conferences where you have a little piece of the BCS pie, where you have a chance to play at least in a big bowl game, get a lot of income that way. Temple was kicked out of the Big East because they weren't drawing very well several years ago, a number of years ago, and were invited back in just as it was coming apart. Changed its name now to the American Athletic Conference. So they're playing in a conference now where there's two teams, correct me if I'm wrong, two teams in Florida, two teams in Texas. They're about to add a team in Louisiana, Tulane. And so you're talking about, okay, we're going to play a baseball program against our conference opponents, a softball program against our conference opponents, and we're going to be putting these guys on planes for overnight trips, not just taking them out of school, but imagine the expense for traveling that many people to that many games. So now you're looking at a real, real cost issue. And I think that that's one of the places they've gotten them into, whereas if they played in a more regionally specific conference where you can take bus trips, then you take your expenses in a half or a quarter. And so I think that this is one of those things where football did drive them into getting into a conference where they thought they were going to be in a better position to make some money, there or at least get some attention, and these other sports suffer because of the travel consequences.
Yeah, Bob's exactly right about that. I mean, the reason I make the argument that this is about football, that this decision to cut sports is about football, is because one of the principal reasons, and I would say that the main reason that the university decided to cut these sports, is they looked at this new conference that they're in, which has teams that average about 18 sports per school. Temple has 24 sports. They have the third smallest athletic budget at $44 million, and they sponsor tied for the largest number of sports. So they have the most sports and one of the least amount of money. So when you look at that conference and the decision that they're in that conference is because of the football team. I mean, football team, without question, drives the conference realignment. So if you look at where Temple was a few years ago where all of their Olympic sports were in the Atlantic 10 Conference and their football team was in the MAC, it wasn't a case where the football team was dragging these sports with them into this other conference, mm-hmm. where there's schools with larger budgets and can sponsor a larger number of sports.
Yeah. So it sounds like football really has been the game changer, and that Temple is planning to continue to invest in football.
Sure. I mean, the cuts are supposed to save $3 to $3.5 million. That's what the athletic director said. Now there's some misconception, I think, that money will be funneled directly into the football program, that all of that money is just going to go straight to the football program. I don't think that's true. And certainly that $3 to $3.5 million wouldn't just up and create a football stadium, which has been rumored a lot to appear on campus in sometime in the next few years. But yes, certainly football is what has drove the bus at Temple for the past decade and will continue to drive the bus.
I want to talk a little bit about Title IX before we take a break, because Temple has long had compliance issues with Title IX. So now here we have, out of these seven teams being eliminated, two of them are women's teams, rowing and
softball.
Does that not present, Joey, more potential Title IX problems?
No, the issue with Title IX was the ratio of male student-athletes to female student-athletes had to closely resemble the ratio of male to female population at the university. Temple had a 57-43 male ratio in its student-athlete scholarships, and that it was a 51-49 female ratio of the student body. So they cut five of the seven sports were male sports, so they believe that will move the ratio closer. I think the Title IX compliance, which is something we're going to look into more, how Temple could be non-compliant for so long and how they could continue to operate. But I think that's something that the university is pointing to as kind of like an easy catch-fall. Like, this is an easy way to explain why we're doing this. We have to comply by federal law, something they've said multiple times, when really I think it's a cost-cutting issue. The university cut the seven most expensive non-revenue sports, meaning the seven sports that aren't football and basketball. I think that's the best, simplest way to put it.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. I mean, they haven't been in compliance since 1972 when the law went into effect. So all of a sudden they're very concerned about being in compliance. It is odd.
We have much more to talk about as we discuss Temple's controversial decision to eliminate seven of its teams. When we come back, we'll talk with one of the coaches who are affected by that decision. Fred Turoff, the men's gymnastics coach, will join us to talk about how this decision has impacted him and his team. And we'll take your calls, too, when Radio Times comes right back.
Beck Institute, internationally recognized source for cognitive behavior therapy, supports WHYY and is accepting clients at their Center for Psychotherapy in Bala Cynwyd. Established by Dr. Judith Beck and Dr. Aaron Beck, founder of cognitive behavior therapy, Beck Institute has served the region since 1994 by providing treatment for psychological challenges, including depression, anxiety, and stress. Details at beckinstitute.org or 610-664-3020.
We asked the National Book Award-winning novelist James McBride to come in for an interview. He asked if he could bring his gospel quintet to play some songs. What were we going to say? No?
It's not my father, it's not my mother, but it's me, oh Lord.
James McBride, musician and author of The Good Lord Bird, next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Canada's Postal Service says within 5 years it will end home delivery. Mail will be delivered to communal boxes instead of individual mailboxes. We'll look at that example and ask if the U.S. Postal Service will follow it. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about Temple's controversial decision to eliminate seven of its intercollegiate sports teams, what that's going to mean for the university, for the student athletes, for the coaches, for all concerned, and we're also getting some insight into why Temple made that decision. We've been talking with Bob Ford, who is a sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Joey Craney is with us as well. He's the editor-in-chief of the Temple News and was also a sports writer for that paper. And joining us now is Fred Turoff. Fred is the head coach of the men's gymnastics team at Temple University. He is in his 38th season at the helm of that program. He's a member of the USA Gymnastics Hall of Fame as a coach. Fred, it is great to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, good morning, Tracy and Bob and Joey. Nice to hear from you.
So how did you get this news, Fred, that the team was being cut? It sounds like you didn't find out too long before your team did.
We had an email on Thursday before stating that I was to have my team meet in the indoor football practice facility at 1:45 and that I had a meeting with the athletic director at 1:05 that day. And so a number of the coaches in my office complex got it, and none of us knew what was going on. So when I went over there for my 1:05 meeting, I went into the room with the new athletic director, Kevin Clark, with the deputy athletic director as well, Pat Kraft, and later on in my short meeting, Mark Ingram, the director of development, came in. And Kevin Clark just laid out, said, look, we're in a situation, we have to drop seven sports, and yours is one of them. And I said to him, do we have any recourse? And he said, no, raising money won't help. We're going to drop the sports. And my only remark to him was, you know, your APR is going to suffer when we're gone. What I mean by that is APR is the academic progress rate. And my team has had the highest grade point average for the past 3 years and the highest in the last four of the last 5 years. We've been recognized by the NCAA for academic excellence and for graduation excellence. And you know, we've had 3 years ago, we had the highest grade point average of all the gymnastics teams in the country. And then we dropped to second and then to third this past year. But still, we've performed academically exceedingly well.
Well, to say nothing of the athletic success.
As a result, the academic average of the department is up higher thanks to us. And, of course, we've had athletic success. In the 38 years that I've coached, let's say the 37 prior years, we've won our conference championship 18 times. So we're just under 50%. I think that's the best record of any of the men's teams that's there.
So, Fred, you're in this for 38 years.
Yeah.
You get this very sudden news that you don't see coming. Your team finds out a short time after that. What do you say to those guys when you receive that kind of news?
Well, there was shock that went throughout the whole room there. And what I did was I called my guys together and I said, "It's just very bad, of course, but you got to remember, you got finals coming up. You have to be students. You got to do well there. We got to do well academically this year. And we still have a season. So we have to train. And we'll deal with this as we go along. But in the meantime, you got to focus on your finals and focus on your training."
That's got to be a tall order, I would think.
Well, I certainly hope it doesn't affect us for the finals period, which is over now. But as far as training, most of them were back in the gym that afternoon, working on their skills and their routines. And we sent them home knowing that when we come back on December 28th, they'd better be in shape, and we've got to meet our season starts January 17th, so they just have to be ready for it.
Yeah. What are your guys saying, Fred, about their decisions going forward? I know that athletes will be able to transfer. We've heard that they'll be able to keep their scholarships as long as they keep their grades up. What are you hearing from the team about what they're thinking for next year?
Well, a few of the guys have started investigating other schools. Of course, some of my guys can't make other teams, so they'll probably stay here. The ones who have any scholarship aid, those are the better gymnasts, and they may well look to transfer. I'm certainly hoping that there's a change of heart here at some point, and we're given some options. One of the sad things is that I've been there for 38 years. Gavin White, the rowing coach, was there for 34 years. We weren't consulted at all on this. We weren't brought in and said, look, we got a big problem. What can we do to solve this thing? It was done completely outside the coaching staff. And, you know, it certainly doesn't show very much respect for the work that we've done over the years and the value we brought to the university. I'm worried about that. Our program brings value to the university. We graduated, athletes graduated at a much higher rate than the general student body, and we graduated at a higher rate than most of the athletes. Hmm. We certainly perform academically, and we bring fame to the university in terms of our academic and athletic accomplishments. Plus, I'm the contact person for USA Gymnastics in Philadelphia, so when they want to bring an event here, they come through Temple University and through me.
Fred, it's Bob.
Yes.
Good to talk to you again. You've been down this road before, and I remember when you had your gymnastics doing handsprings down Broad Street to raise money and to bring some attention to the program when they tried to excise it at least once before.
Yeah, 1994.
Yeah, and if they tell you there's no recourse, are you sure that that's the case? Because unfortunately what we've seen at some schools and universities is the way to save a program is to cut it. In other words, people who might support it and might want it to continue would never reach into their pockets until they think it's actually gone. Now, obviously, that's a very dicey way to save a program because it doesn't always work. But when they say there's no recourse, are you sure that's the case?
Well, I'm hoping it's not the case, Bob. I'm hoping that enough public outcry gets to them so that the president and the board say, we didn't realize that the public was that concerned and that the program meant this much to Temple University. Let's see what we can do about this. Now, if they're talking about the cost of a program, I want to straighten something out. I have 19 on my team currently. I'm allowed 4 scholarships, and I haven't given them all out yet. But let's say I give out 4 scholarships. That means 15 are paying. So 15 are paying the entire cost of coming to Temple University. And if you just look at tuition alone, that's probably in the neighborhood of $400,000. My whole program to run is around the area of $300,000. So we're bringing a net profit into the university by being there. And that's been the case every year. I have more people paying to come than I have scholarship allotment.
And Fred, you know these numbers far better than I do, but 30 years ago, how many Division I gymnastics programs were there in the country, and how many are there right now?
Yeah, this is a very big problem that we face in men's gymnastics and other Olympic sports. When I began coaching in 1976, there were 138 men's varsity teams in the country of all divisions. We are now down to 17.
Wow.
We've taken a hit. Wrestling's taken a hit. Swimming and diving's taken a hit. And we're doing what we can to stay on. And I felt that I was in pretty good shape considering the fact that we perform so well academically and athletically, and we fundraise. Now, all of us coaches are given certain targets to fundraise. Mine is $29,000 a year. So last year I raised $59,000. Well, that meant I could put some money into an endowment that was started a while back. This year I have the same target to raise. Now, I'm sure that my fan base and alumni base will come through and help me raise that. And that's to help make me operate. That's what I have to raise. And I would want, of course, hope to have more come in. But if we're not there anymore, then there's no reason for many people to give money to the university. So the university is going to be losing out that way. But if it turns out that we get to a point where they say, well, if you can raise X, we'll keep you. I know that I have people who will work for me in that critical situation to try to raise X. I've already had several calls from people who are willing to do that. And the same sort of thing happened to Cal Berkeley 2 years back. They were threatened with extinction. And they were able to get the department to say, well, if you raise this much, we'll keep you. And they were able to get pledges to reach that goal. I think we could certainly do that here.
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. Fred, while we have you with us, I'd like to perhaps reconnect you with somebody you know. We have a caller from South Carolina. I want to welcome Clay to Radio Times. Hi, Clay.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me. So Fred, first off, thank you for being on the program, and thank you for your lifelong dedication to the sport and the team, and as well as your unwavering dedication to your students. What I'd like to say is Russell Conwell founded Temple on the central idea of opportunity, achievement, and fortune. being present to all the resources in the community, like the ones that surround Temple University. It's very much a statement about civic involvement and the huge benefits that overlooked communities can give when presented with the opportunity. A central part of President Theobald's new campus plan that will be coming out is going to be a new football stadium with a price tag of what we're guessing is going to be $300 to $500 million. And tentatively, Temple has been reaching out to the city in order to create plans to close streets, alter traffic patterns, and a whole bunch of different things that are going to impact the community. At the same time, we're seeing the new president and athletic director cutting teams with strong academic records, high graduation rates, high GPAs, and dedicated alumni bases, and teams that give students like myself the competitive advantage in job interviews, as we could talk about the discipline and determination that we acquired from being on teams like Temple Men's Gymnastics. These are all, of course, qualities that are directly in line with the university's core mission. So my question is, has the new president, board of trustees, and new athletic director lost sight of what's really important? Have they lost sight of Temple's founding mission and these other important characteristics that these teams bring to the university and the community?
Thanks, Clay, for your call. Fred?
Well, certainly from my point of view, they have. President Theobald comes in from outside the city, as does his athletic director and deputy. They don't have a feeling for the history of Temple athletics. They don't have a feeling for the university the same as someone who has been here for a long time. And I just don't think they realize the value of having these teams. Now, in terms of effect on the community, there's one thing I should mention. We've been running a Sunday clinic for kids, local kids, to come and learn the fundamentals of gymnastics since 1982. We run it in the fall and the spring. And we do it as a fundraiser for both men's and women's teams. We also have been running a boys program, a boys competitive program, for the past 11 years. And so it provides kids in the area the opportunity to train at a higher level and then compete in the U.S. Junior Olympic program. And these things could go along with us as well. They could disappear. And so kinesiology has an activity course in gymnastics. I teach the teaching majors how to teach gymnastics. There's a lot of gymnastics involvement at Temple University. When I was a student in college here, at that time, every junior high and high school had a gymnastics team. There are none anymore. And most of those coaches were from Temple University. So Temple has had a tremendous effect on gymnastics in the area. And I don't think that the new folks have the same feeling that someone who's been here and steeped in history would understand.
Fred, here's the $64 million question. What happens to you in all of this?
Well, I'm a year-to-year employee, as are all the coaches, with the exception, I believe, of football and basketball. So June 30th right now is the last day of my work at Temple University, which is not a good prospect for me. My son is actually on my team as a sophomore, and he's one of the people who's considering transferring away because he wants to continue competing at this level, and he's good enough to. As far as what I'll do after that, I think I'm going to hit that road when I get to it. But in the meantime, I've got a job to do with my athletes, and I want to continue working as hard as possible with them to have a great season.
Yeah. Fred, it's Joey from the Temple News. Good to talk to you. The idea that this might be your last season as coach at Temple, I mean, how do you prepare a team for a spring season that knows it's going to be eliminated in the summer? And what effect do you think this will have on the mental health of your team and maybe even, you know, the competitive outlook of your team, given the fact that many of your kids might transfer?
Well, I would hope that they would want to put on as good a show as possible, and that's what I'm going to impress upon them. You're still part of a Temple gymnastics team and a Temple gymnastics tradition. We hope that we get lots of fans in the stands. We have only two home meets. And the reason we have only two home meets is that's all we could afford under our budget. So I'd like to see a lot of people there. We have a meet Sunday, February 2nd at 2 o'clock versus Springfield, and then we have a tri-meet with Air Force and University of Illinois at Chicago on Saturday night, February 15th at 7:30. And by the way, that last meet is in the midst of the Philadelphia Boys Invitational, where 500 or so boys, plus their parents and families, come to Temple University for competition. And that exposes them all to Temple. And so some of them may in the future be Temple students, but they, if we're gone and we can't keep doing that, then that exposure to Temple disappears, and so Temple doesn't get some of the future students it could get.
And I've seen some student athletes for some of the teams around campus walking around with their Temple sweatshirts, and they put masking tape over the word Temple. Have you said anything to your team about how they continue to represent themselves as student athletes? Even
none of my guys did that, and I don't think they should. We're still Temple athletes. We still should be proud of being part of the program, and we still have to go out and perform as best as possible. I would think they would, especially anybody who's considering transferring, you want to do well this year so that another coach will look at you as an asset on the team, you see. Now, as far as the ones who have scholarships transferring away, if they will have a similar scholarship when they go to another team, I can't say. But I know that a number of them will stay. And there is a club program at Temple as well, run through the recreation department, meaning the student recreation department, that if we're not here as a varsity team, some of them will still be able to train and compete in that particular program.
Fred, it's Bob again. Your life has been in this sport, and as you look at the erosion of varsity programs across the country, especially the men's programs, because the men's gymnastics at the college level is really what feeds the USA Gymnastics Olympic program much, much more than the women's programs, it just seems to me like we could be looking at an erosion of U.S. ability in this sport if we look down the road. And I know that's not a happy sort of thing to contemplate for you, but how else can we turn this around? I mean, are we going to be able to compete at an Olympic international level with just club athletes?
Well, when you talk about the national team, the bulk of those people have college training. And in fact, the current best gymnast we have is at the University of Michigan. He's a senior, Sam McCulloch. And he came up through the USAG Junior Olympic program and then went to college. Sure, there's going to be an erosion. What might happen is that USA Gymnastics and the U.S. Olympic Committee may see that it's necessary to open more training centers to accommodate not just gymnastics but other sports that are being cut so that we still have fine training opportunities for those top-level athletes. But having the collegiate program in place certainly means nobody has to build a gym. Nobody has to start a program somewhere. And so it's a concern of USA Gymnastics also that college gymnastics stays. Now, there are some programs across the country who are endowed completely. The schools have no money problems, and they're going to stay around for sure, yeah. Such as Stanford and Oklahoma, Penn State also. They've had plenty of money. And some of it is due to football success, which is terrific that they were able to share that revenue. But we just don't have that same situation.
Yeah, Fred, we are just about out of time, but we want to wish you a wonderful season this year, and we certainly hope that somehow it will turn out not to be the final season for Temple Gymnastics. Thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times.
Quite all right, Tracy, and nice to talk to you guys.
We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA Continuing Education invites you to join their community of artists of all ages and levels this spring with a lineup of drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking classes, weekend workshops, pre-college Saturday classes for high school students, and master classes with noted artists. Registration is now open, and classes begin January 21st. For details, pafa.edu/ce.
Hang me, oh, hang me.
On the next Fresh Air, Joel and Ethan Coen talk about their new movie Inside Llewyn Davis, about a folk singer in Greenwich Village in 1961. The Coen brothers also made O Brother, Where Art Thou, The Big Lebowski, and True Grit. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Modern criminal investigation. Somebody just made it all up.
Sherlock was the beginning of all the enthusiasm, getting people interested in using science, investigating.
Hey, Sherlock, the imaginary Mr. Holmes is the brains behind crime solving even today. It's anything but elementary. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
today at noon on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about Temple and its decision last week to cut seven intercollegiate sports. That decision has not gone over well with just about anybody. And we have been talking about the reasons behind that decision and the impact that it's likely to have on the university, on the student athletes, on the coaches as well. Joining us as our guests are Bob Ford, sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Joey Craney, who's the editor-in-chief of the Temple News, who is also a former sports writer for the Temple News, and we just spoke with Fred Turoff, who is a Hall of Fame men's gymnastics coach at Temple University. We welcome your calls as well at 888-477-9499. In fact, we'll go to the phones now to Roxborough, and we'll start with Aaron. Welcome, Aaron, to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
So I'm a Temple graduate. I was on the women's rowing team from 2007 to 2011. I was a captain my senior year, and I actually was out of the country when the decision was made. I came back and had all of these emails. Did you hear about Temple? They cut our team. The rowing team's had a number of protests and demonstrations, and we've gotten together and have tried to find ways to find maybe some way to bring the team back, but it really isn't looking good. And my biggest question, or I guess concern really, is from the university's perspective, where they're putting priorities on certain teams. I know the men's gymnastics coach touched on the point that the men's gymnastics teams had one of the best GPAs in the school. The same was true for women's rowing. We consistently had girls that were in the top 10 student-athlete GPAs every single year that I was at Temple. And I know that the rowing community in Philadelphia alone is one of the biggest in the United States. Our alumni are not only employing Temple graduates, but we're donating a lot of money back to the school. We're donating a lot of money back to the rowing program. And I guess my question is, you know, was there any conversation, or does the president or any of the athletic departments have any comments to say about the contributions that maybe some of the teams that don't bring in a ton of money up front but provide a lot of value postgraduate bring to the university?
Well, Aaron, thank you for your call. Joey, what do you say?
Sure. A lot of the criticism has been, it's a new administration from Indiana. President Theobald comes from Indiana. The athletic director, Kevin Clark, came with him. A lot of people have said that they just didn't understand the rowing community here. Big Five rowing, obviously, with the Dadvales and the Schuylkill River. I mean, it's one of the greatest rowing communities in the country. And obviously the fight for the boathouse has been the major driving force behind that. Temple submitted a proposal to the city to get both of its rowing teams a new boathouse last year, and there was a long battle, and it was tabled in April because at the time the university said it was just hitting the pause button. It had to reconsider all of its options. Now we know that maybe they were tabling it because they maybe didn't want to build a boathouse for a program that wasn't going to exist. But yeah, there's certainly a conception that maybe they didn't realize what they were cutting when they came here.
Yeah, Aaron, in answer specifically to your question, there's been no part of the conversation that's been coming from the administration that does address what's being lost from the academic side or what's being lost from having a well-rounded athletic student body. And yeah, that's something that has been missing and should not have been.
And just as an aside, Joey, from what I've read, Temple spent something like $60,000 on a couple of new boats for the rowing team just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And that would seem to send a green light signal that all systems are go.
Right. I think it was actually more than $100,000. It was new equipment for the women's rowing teams. I posed that question to the athletic director in an interview after they cut the sports. You know, why were you trying to build this new boathouse? Why are you giving them new equipment if you were going to cut this program anyway? Basically, what he said was he had said that when he came in January, he knew that this was going to have to happen. He was going to have to cut some sports, but he didn't know which ones. So he said the decision to try to get the boathouse going, to get them new equipment, was made without knowing whether or not this would actually be a program that was going to be cut.
We go back to the phones, and we'll go to Germantown. And Mike, welcome, Mike, to Radio Times.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, Bob Ford, what a great, intelligent article you wrote. I mean, the detail, and it certainly was a matter of fact and not a matter of opinion.
Thank you very much. I have an intern that does that stuff, but okay.
Well, clearly you're giving him great guidance. Is he a Temple grad? Probably is.
I'm an intern, too. Yeah, I don't know if he's talking about me.
But anyway, I was at the rally at the boathouse here on Saturday. A couple of things. They keep referring to the condemned boathouse. The boathouse was never condemned. They were illegally evicted by the park director because of an L&I violation. For 10% of what Mark Falk, the park director, spent on studying the problem, they could have stopped the roof leak that incurred the whole L&I violation. So let me put it clearly. They don't need a new boathouse. In fact, that terribly unsafe building still continues to be occupied by the Marine Police. Now, this happened just before Nutter took office. There were conversations way back when, oh, give him a chance to deal with it. He'll take care of it. Da, 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 da. 6 years later, and we still are outside of a building. And by the way, the ultimate thing will wind up collapsing, demolition through neglect, because one of those leaks continues to leak, and that's like a hip rafter. It's one of the main structures in that second floor area, and that will eventually collapse. And they'll say, "See, I told you." But please look into that. That was an illegal eviction. That whole idea of chasing people out of an unsafe building, they didn't do that at 22nd and Market. It certainly didn't happen at the boathouse either. But they don't need a new boathouse. They could occupy that space they have right now, repair the roof, and they'd be back in the home that they had for 40 years.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. We will look at that.
Yeah, thank you, Mike, for your call. And that has been an interesting point, because Temple really has been using tents, right, to cover the boats, and certainly they've been exposed to the elements in a way that they would not be if they were able to be in the boathouse. So that certainly has been a big part of this.
Well, it's part of the reason they needed new shells, because shells that sit outside, they deteriorate, and the composition of the structure changes. They're not fast in the water anymore.
Yeah. The tents have collapsed. The tents are literally situated in a parking lot right next to the St. Joe's boathouse, and they've collapsed multiple times due to weather. I mean, they've lost close to $200,000 on just tent collapse, just because they didn't have adequate structures to house their equipment.
Wow. We'll go to Reading next, and Kelly. Welcome, Kelly, to Radio Times.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a graduate training professor for a higher ed program within the Pashi system, so I'm at one of the Pashi schools, where we've had support services cut, academic programs and majors cut, like a nursing program at the master's and undergrad level. We've also had several of our athletic programs and services cut. And, you know, as I talk to my students about this, the question has been coming up, you know, what else, what's really going on here? You know, when these cuts are made, it's done in much the same manner. They bring you in the morning of and say, well, you know, we've made this decision after all of this research and investigation. And you just start to wonder, what's the larger issue here? Particularly as we hear of the economic challenges within higher ed all across the country, what really is the underlying issue with all of this? And I'll take the response off the air.
All right. Thank you, Kelly, for your call. Bob, what do you say?
Like the rest of us, they're looking to save money on their budget, and they're looking for easy ways to do it. And I'm sure the price and the cost of running a college and a university or a trade school or whatever is rising these days. And obviously the economy hasn't been good in the last few years, so you're looking at cutbacks. And as we said earlier, you spoke about a nursing program, Kelly. Band, orchestra, all the extracurricular things that are going on around colleges, not just sports, are suffering. Now, is it administrators that know the price of everything and the value of nothing? Often it seems that way, and I think that's the case at Temple.
We'll go back to the phones and to Fairmount and welcome Louisa to our conversation. Hi, Louisa.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I guess I just have a comment just about maybe the athletic director, not really also. I'm sure it may have been already touched upon, and I apologize if it was, because I came to this conversation late, about the athletic director not really realizing what kind of community he came into when he came to Temple. And just the fact that the rowing community is such a large and outreaching community, that not realizing that this is a rowing town, and that that making the choice of cutting the crew team, especially with their track record of their, you know, numerous wins all across, you know, the board that they've done, just that, you know, wasn't exactly a thoughtful decision as much as they thought it was, considering he doesn't come from that background whatsoever.
Well,
and just whether or not. Go ahead, I apologize.
That's okay. You raise a good point, Louise, and it is actually something that Joey Craney spoke about a few minutes ago, just the whole idea that rowing really has a very special place here, and if you are not from this area, you may not understand the significance.
Yeah, there was a public hearing when Temple was trying to get a new boathouse for these teams. There was a public hearing in January of this year where it was at a public hall on Boathouse Row, and there was hundreds of people in this hall, just voicing support for the decision to get these teams a new boathouse. So that demonstrated the overwhelming support that it has in the community. But I mean, since the cuts were handed out, there have been multiple members of the institutions in the rowing community that have come out in support of Temple Rowing, including things like the Schuylkill Navy and things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's a big deal in Philadelphia, certainly.
See if we can get one more call in before we wrap up. We'll go to Doylestown and we'll welcome Greg to Radio Times. Hi, Greg.
Hi. You know, the Board of Trustees has made it clear to President Theobald that football is a sacred cow. It's not to be touched. That's their decision. But, you know, the problem with Temple's Board of Trustees and many others around the country is that they're adopting this business model for picking high-level administrators at these schools. And what they do is that they bring in these high-priced mercenaries from out of town who don't have roots in the community, and they're here within a short period of time to kind of make a bright record for themselves, to show that they're innovative, that they can impose changes, that they can now save money. And then they go on, and they don't have to deal with the shambles that they leave behind. And I'm afraid that what's happening in Temple Athletics is going to be happening across the university to a lot of academic programs as well.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Greg. Gentlemen, your response.
Well, I think that mercenaries may be harsh, but yeah, they are outsiders and they don't know the area, and they are brought in to run a business. And the Board of Trustees, many of whom do not have ties to the community either. I know that there's a couple of them just appointed by the state, right? They're just sort of put on, or you have ceremonial guys like Bill Cosby and things like that. And they're not terribly responsive to the community. You bring up Bill Cosby. I mean, you were talking about rowing. Everybody has their own axe to grind. But can you imagine no Temple runners in the Penn relays, you know, outdoor track and field, you know, where Bill used to show up every year with his Temple hat on, because he ran in the Penn relays as a Temple athlete.
Yeah. And one of the things that people talk about is Kevin Clark and Neil Theobald, the new president, coming from Indiana University, where they know what big-time athletics can do for a college, certainly. And in the Big Ten, Indiana actually had one of the smaller budgets there, too. So Kevin Clark knew what it was like to sponsor a large number of sports with a small budget. When he came to Temple, I think the situation was even worse. So he said, this just can't sustain itself.
I think we can squeeze in one more quick call. We'll go straight to Philly to Rebecca. Welcome, Rebecca, to Radio Times.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
So I kind of caught on to the conversation a little bit late, but wanted to sort of give a little bit of our perspective from the women's rowing program or the rowing program in general, just kind of agreeing with all the previous callers, but the prior caller mentioned the impact on the community, and I think that's something that all of the Temple student athletes and the rowing program in particular has spent a lot of time out in the community, and it's just such a shame to see that impact just kind of disappear without any additional conversation. It's been a rough week for the rowing program, that's for sure.
No doubt about it. Rebecca, thank you for calling in. I mean, this really has hit a nerve, and I think particularly with the rowing community in Philadelphia, to say nothing of baseball and so forth. Joey.
That was Rebecca Gerzabowski, I think. I just butchered her last name, but she's the women's rowing coach. I recognize her voice. I think that it was her first season as coach. We've talked to a coach who came from Boston, said it was his dream to coach on the Schuylkill River in Philadelphia, and he came here this year, and now he's one of the coaches is going to have to be laid off. So yeah, I mean, this is not just
a college, or I mean, a high school coaching job to come here in October.
Right.
Right.
I mean, this is this is obviously not just affecting the students. It's affecting a lot of different people in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of people stories behind these economic stories. And we talk about the 200 effective athletes. There's also a lot of kids who have, you know, signed letters of intent and were coming here, and they thought they had their college career set with how they were going to do it. That's another 50, 60 kids. And now what? Now they're out of luck, or they have to change plans very, very quickly.
Yeah. So what will each of you be watching in the weeks to come with this story? Joey, I know that you'll be working through the holidays. What are you focused on at this point?
We're trying to talk to as many different people from students from all the teams and coaches from all the teams as possible. I mean, one of the things we're going to consider is walk-ons. Kids who come to Temple University, not necessarily on scholarship, just want to have an opportunity to play sports at Temple and are granted that opportunity because they work hard, and then they're just one fell swoop, the rug swept out from underneath them. So one of the things Temple keeps saying is when you're guaranteed a scholarship, you'll still get it. But what about these kids who just wanted to play softball, to play baseball, and now it's being taken away from them really quick. So that a lot of other, we're trying to gather up as many stories as we can.
Yeah, and not only that, if you have 25 guys on a baseball team, there's not 25 scholarships. That's not the way it works in college athletics. He has maybe 6 to 8 scholarships, and he chops them up into quarters and eighths and halves. So it's not like these guys are all full-ride guys who are, you know, all taken care of now. This is a dream they were pursuing. But I think what I'm going to be looking at, aside from the Temple news, because you don't want to miss that because they've been on top of this story, is are there going to be groundswells for these smaller sports? The people out there, the foundations, are going to try to save them. That's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, a lot more to report on this story. I want to thank both of you. Bob Ford from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Joey Craney from the Temple News. Thank you so much for being with us here on Radio Times.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane, and you've been listening to Radio Times on WHYY.